Hi, Conscious Equestrians. Thank you so much for joining me again. I have a podcast for you today from one of our anti-burnout ambassadors, Tony Clark, who is the Cobby Chronicles on Instagram and TikTok. I absolutely loved recording this. It's so interesting. Honestly, it is one of the best ones I think I've done. Enjoy.
So my name is Tony and I am the voice and face behind the Cobby Chronicles on Instagram and TikTok. I suppose we can throw that in there as well. I have four horses of my own, as well as working with young racehorses before they go off to training. So I have horses in every which direction of my life. And then in my other spare time, I'm actually also a carer for my nan who has Parkinson's. So it's kind of, I find it quite difficult to juggle life and horse life, but it's, my horses have always been sort of like my break, my respite from things. But at the moment, like, I've got two that are lame and I don't even want to look at them. Yes. They see me coming and I think they're just as sick of me as I am looking at them at the moment.
Oh God. Okay. So you work, professionally with young racehorses as well, do you?
Yeah, so I work for a private breeder. She does it as a hobby. I don't know why anybody would want to add more stress into their life, but she does it as a hobby, and I look after them from when they're born up until they're sent off to training, and then when they come back from training I have them in their little respite period, and I'm just basically their skivvy for 6 months, so.
Oh, cool. So what kind of racehorses are they?
Well, at the moment, we haven't really got any. We've got one that's home from training that's a flat racer. She wasn't very good with the hurdles, but they're going to have another go. And we've got one who's away at the moment, just been backed, first starting his flat training. So, we've got a bit of a mixed bag, and there's a couple of dressage horses in there as well. So I've got quite a variation.
Hey, you've got your hands full then.
Yeah, just a bit. Just a bit.
Okay, so that's your full-time role, and then you work that around you work caring for your nan around that.
Yeah, so my nan was actually quite recently diagnosed with Parkinson's. It's kind of been a long windy road to get there, and it's been quite frustrating at times, like trying to because she needs a lot more care than she's very stubborn old boot is my nan, bless her, and she wouldn't accept the fact she needed help. So it's kind of been a bit of swings and roundabouts. So I try and balance like hospital visits or home visits or stuff that she needs doing at home with my job and my horses at the moment.
Okay, so that's I mean anyone that's a carer in my head is amazing, because honestly it takes up so much. It takes up time, but it takes up so much emotional and physical energy as well. Do you find that it affects the rest of your life, or how do you work the carer side of you around everything else?
With great difficulty. So 3 years ago, I actually had a breakdown. I was in the midst of a nursing degree. I don't want to say a run-in, but issues with patients, and didn't receive any of the support I needed from the university. And at the time, my nan was kind of slowly just starting to kind of just go down the slope. Like, her mobility wasn't quite the same. And I, for a very long time, didn't have that balance. And I found a lot of the time I was giving everything of myself to everyone else, and I didn't have any time for me. And the nail in the coffin was, I actually, going to lower the tone, I had an abnormal smear test, and it just sent me absolutely... I was a wreck, and it was at that, like, my fiance was in Bahrain with the Navy at the time, and it was at, kind of at that point we both said, like, something's got to give, like, because this cannot keep going on. I wasn't eating properly, I was drinking a lot more than I should, I have quite a distorted relationship with food and things as well, and it was just all a big accumulation, and it something, it was either my mental health and I was going to give, or the situation had to change. So I actually left the degree, and now I work 4 days with the racehorses, and I see the horses in my lunch, because I get a big 3-hour lunch break between my morning and my afternoon. And then on my days off, I have the morning with my nan to help have a shower or jobs around the house. And then I have the rest of the day to do what I need to do. And then I can come back, and my auntie kind of comes in on her days off. And we sort of just kind of go along that sort of motion, because else I find I can't function. And that's the bottom. I can't function. And even like just getting out of bed, when I can feel myself kind of like on the cusp, like I just have to like lay there and give myself a pep talk, because you don't want to get out of bed, but you know you have to. And when I kind of get to that stage, I sort of know that something that I need to change something.
And that's the thing, is that there doesn't necessarily have to be a label for that feeling necessarily. Mm-hmm. And because I think we've all experienced that, and that I feel like that's something that we need to talk about more, is in society in general, but really within equestrianism, is being okay with the fact that sometimes you just really don't want to get up and do whatever it is that you're supposed to be doing. And it's not because you're weak, it's because there's something that needs addressing in your life. Because you are damned exhausted. So do you get like proper full days off? And it sounds really horrible. Do you get a day off from caring for your nan?
Not really. I live with my grandparents. So I have been here. So it first started about 5 years ago, the proper dependency. She had a fall. And just little things, like it started off like small things, like just helping around the house or whatever. But now, I mean, before lockdown, I was quite lucky. Like my partner's family live in Kent, and we could go up there and I could have a couple of days, no horses, no anything. But then I found myself like it would only be Friday, Saturday, Sunday. We'd travel on the Friday, come back on the Sunday. But on the Saturday, I would be almost feeling like I should be doing something. Like that feeling of, like I don't like throwing words like anxiety or depression or stuff around all the time, because I think people are so quick to use that label. But I did used to feel anxious because I felt like I should be doing something, because my life is constantly at a million miles an hour. It took a long time for me to understand that actually it's all right not to be running around like a blue ass fly constantly. Like you don't need to live your life like that.
Yeah, that's a big realization when you can just go, oh, and take the pressure off and stop running around so quickly. And I noticed that on the yard, especially if I'm trying really hard to get a million and one things done, and fit too many things into too short a space of time. And then somebody said to me once, well, why don't you just take that one thing out of that space? One of those things that you are trying to fit into those 3 hours, just take one of those things out, and suddenly you can just slow down and you can stop feeling so anxious about fitting it all in. Just do it another time. So that's kind of what it's prioritizing, what you absolutely have to do.
Yeah.
What you should do, but can possibly, you know, it's not urgent. And then something that can wait until the next day. And I come from a family that, I mean, Dad's motto is don't put off something that you can do today. Don't put it off until tomorrow.
That's my granddad's as well. My granddad is the same. And then he gets, tomorrow never comes. That's the
exactly.
Other one.
Yeah. It's but like, it does. Oh my God. Stop stressing me out.
Yeah, it does. And I think that's something that we kind of all get wrapped up in. Like people think, and like I know everybody live by the life short, live in the moment, do this, do that. And I get it. And I do. I understand that wholeheartedly. But at the same time, I think it's, you have to have that balance of saying, actually, all being well, there will be a tomorrow and it can wait until then. The world isn't going to implode, you know, there's not going to be a nuclear war, it's fine, you know, there will be another day. And it's a hard lesson, I think, especially as equestrians, I think we're so regimented because our horses are so regimented that kind of almost without realizing becomes implemented on the rest of our life as well, because we live around this clock of our horse needs feeding, our horse needs this, our horse needs that, farriers coming, the vet's coming. And that rigidity sometimes I think kind of takes over, and being able to just let go of the reins, pardon the pun, let go of the reins a little bit. It's marvelous what it can do for anyone, really.
Yeah. I think we do get conditioned into thinking that things can't change, and that's how they've always been done. And also with horses, because you know horse welfare is obviously so important, and you wouldn't do your job if you didn't care about horses. I wouldn't do my job if I didn't care about horses. But actually, why don't we care about the riders a bit more?
Exactly.
And so, learn to take the pressure off a little bit.
Something I say to people quite a lot of the time, like when I have conversations with people about this sort of thing, is you can't give your best self to people if you're not looking after yourself the best.
Yes.
You know, it's not just like sleeping well or eating right. It's doing stuff that's, sometimes horses are great, but I also think if you have time to maybe have an extra hobby or even just sit down and watch a film of an evening and be able to just have that time to yourself, because mentally as well as physically your body needs it.
Yeah.
And I've been at that stage where I'm burning the candle at both ends and in the middle, and nobody thanks you for it. Nobody thanks you in the end. That's in the long run, and it's all for naught.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's, I think getting to the stage where you know that you need a day off, or you know you need a period of time off, or you book a regular day off. Oh my God, how dare you? and then using that time to the best of your ability, like, or the most effectively that you can. Some of the people that I've spoken to fairly recently have said that they book a day off and they go and sit on their sofa and they literally look at social media for the entire time that they have the day off, and then they finish feeling more guilty than they started, because these people haven't had a day off on that particular Sunday or Monday or whenever they take the day off, and they then feel worse about themselves after they've taken a day off. So I think we need to learn to use the time as effectively as we possibly can too. What do you usually do if you have a day off?
So believe it or not, this Buddha physique does go to the gym. I do enjoy the gym. We're quite blessed in Cornwall. We have lots of coastal walks and places. Like, I love to be near the beach. I spent a little bit of time in the officer reserves with the Navy. So being near the sea makes me really happy. It's my other content place. So we like to go for coastal walks, take the dog somewhere. Just places where I can be quiet, which is ironic because I've got a mouth like a foghorn, so being somewhere quiet is the best thing for me. Just somewhere that I can, I think when you're somewhere noisy, if you, like, for me personally, I've got a very busy brain. I've got 101 things going on, all the tabs are left open and the computer is crashing. So somewhere that I can just organize what's going on without somebody else talking to me, or the radio going, or the TV, or that's what I do on my time off, just to channel find my inner zen.
Yes. Yeah, that's a good tip, actually. See whether you can go somewhere quiet. I know there's an awful lot of good that goes on social media, but I feel like you need to leave social media and the scrolling behind on your days off. You can genuinely have a day off away from a screen. How long do we spend I'm staring at a screen now. How long do we spend staring at a screen?
See, something I listen to a lot of podcasts because I'm self-employed and I work on my own. So I'm like Billy No Mates most of the time. So at least I feel like I've got friends when I got my podcasts in. And something I actually learned from good old Vicky Patterson, she said that in the morning when she wakes up, she doesn't look at her phone for an hour at all, because then she calls it her power hour. And if you look at something, like you open it and the news is horrendous, or somebody's, I don't know, dog's cat's auntie's been eaten by a wolf or something. You don't have that negativity in your bubble. No one can see my air quotes. Like, you don't let that in, and it stops the other people's stuff, I don't want to swear, imposing on your being is, and how you set up for the day. And I think that's really, and I don't do it as much as I should, and I will put my hands up and admit it. And I think some of that is because, as I said just now, I barely know mates. I think, oh, I've got friends on here, so I spend my time thinking through. But actually, as you say, it makes me feel worse. And like, as at the moment, as I said, two of my horses are lame, so I see people that are out doing this, that and the other, or they're off doing whatever, or somebody else is, something's happened to them, and you don't realize at the time, but you take it all in, and we're like sponges, we soak it all up, and it's no good. It's no good for you.
Yes, exactly. And I don't think you realize that it's no good for you. Like, when you're eating something really rubbish, you kind of know it's no good for you. But when you're looking at social media, you know, or you know you're drinking alcohol, or you're, you know, drinking Coke or something, you genuinely know that it's not really very good for you. But when you're on social media, it doesn't feel like it's no good for you. And I'm really guilty of getting up, and literally, I think part of it is also because I've got family in Australia, and whatever is going on overnight here, whatever's going on in Australia is going on overnight here. So quite often my phone has gone mental in the middle of the night if my sister or my dad have been texting. So I do straight away look at my phone, and that's that, you know, I that's genuinely how I start my day. And I know I shouldn't. And actually, I really like Vicky Patterson. She was originally on Geordie Shore, wasn't she?
Yeah. So, and I mean, I've listened, she's quite a strong advocate for, on social media, seeing the real side of it and mental health and things like that. But similarly to you, like, I roll over and the first thing I do is check the weather, and depending on what that is, depends on how my day starts. Yes. If it's raining, I might stay in bed an extra 5 minutes just to prepare myself.
How many weather apps do you have, though? Because I feel like equestrians have every single weather app.
Have one. Really? I swear by the Met Office, if anybody else says it's something different, I'm like, nope, don't want to hear it, the Met Office. And most of the time it's wrong, but I'm completely loyal to it for some reason. I probably give them the most hits every day, honestly. Yeah. All the time. It's a permanent page.
I know, that's what I think I've got Met Office, BBC, and some other, I've got four. It's terrible, and I choose the one that I like most.
Literally, you just are loyal to that one that says it's the best weather, don't you?
Yeah.
And then when it's wrong, you're like, I should have listened to the other one.
Yeah. And I think the one that I go with the most is the most optimistic one, and it's not usually like that. Like, it probably said that it's going to be really sunny today, and I'm looking at the weather now and it's absolutely peeing down outside.
It literally feels like, you know, like in Mean Girls when she's like, there's a 20% chance that it's raining. Yes. And the thing is I'll check the weather app and it'll be like 20% chance of rain as I'm stood underneath a rain cloud thinking, I could have done this. Yes. I could have done this.
Oh dear, I love that film. Anyway, we digress.
Sorry.
It's all right. No, it's good. You're cheering, you're definitely cheering up my Monday, my rainy Monday. So I was going to ask, we obviously ran a little kind of competition, I suppose, we wanted the best anti-burnout ambassadors that we could find, and we chose you. So what made you apply for that?
So when I had my breakdown, at the time I didn't know what it was, but I just thought I was going a bit wibble. I just thought, you know, nobody says to you, or was talking about, like, I think we were just kind of on the cusp of people talking about like mental health and people feeling down, and I didn't know what it was, you know, and I didn't have anybody say to me, do you know what, this is why you're feeling like that, or this is a completely normal feeling, or this isn't a normal feeling, but this is why you're feeling like it. And I've been there, or I understand, or I know someone who has. And I feel like I felt so alone. I felt certain, even though my fiance, bless his heart, he did all he could from the Middle East, and I was over here, and my nan, bless her, she doesn't understand the world of like social media. And I mean, she's 80 now, love her. So it's difficult for her to comfort me in things that aren't relevant to her. And for me personally, when I worked in the hospital, I worked in A&E, and we've seen a lot of people come in with mental health issues that even though they had nurses there, they felt like they were almost like silenced. Like it was just, oh, it's just another, you know, just another, don't want to use a derogatory term, but you know, just another one with another problem. And I feel like it's hard to differentiate between actually having a problem and just feeling sad. And there's a validation for both. Like you can feel sad and that's fine. And for other people, and to be a voice to say to someone, I felt like that, I know someone who's felt like that, I think it's quite important for that familiarity almost. Like, yes, we're all in very different situations, but we've all felt something similar at one point or another. So to be able to speak for people, not for people, that sounds awful, but about it to other people, I think for me is something I'm quite passionate about. That was a really long-winded way of saying that. I'm really sorry.
No, it's good, because I was just going to ask, actually, when you were training to be a nurse, were you given proper training in how to deal with mental health issues?
So there are a couple of different ways you can do your NASH training. You can do adult mental health or pediatric, and I went for adult nursing. And it just so happened that one of my placements was in A&E, and there are a specific group of nurses called the psych liaison nurses. And when you're in your placements, you can spend a bit of time with each department. And I spent a week with them, and I can honestly say it was the most eye-openingly terrifying experience I've ever had. Mm-hmm. And it was the start, I think, of when things started to go downhill. Unfortunately, we had a patient who came in with severe mental health issues after an attempt on his life, and they discharged him and said he wasn't at risk. And they found him the following morning, a mile down the road from the hospital. And he was under my care, and I carried that for a very long time. I felt such awful guilt, and I went to the university counsellors and was told, well, why? It's not your problem.
To a
student nurse, I was in my second year of training. I carried that for a long time, and nobody sort of said, this is why you're feeling like it. It's completely normal. Here, let me help you. I don't believe in like holding people's hand constantly and saying it's okay, we'll pander to everything, but it's all right to hold hands every now and then. And I just needed somebody to say like, it's all right, like you're fine, you know, this is why. And I didn't have that, and even now, like it haunts me. I will be honest, I still remember his name and everything about him. And whenever you're in that sort of situation, it will always have people that will stay with you forever. And I honestly, he will stick with me from to the day I die. And that should never have happened. But he had nobody to stand there and say for him, I need help. And I seriously need help. And I genuinely believe he was failed. But
yeah, it's so common. My other half's in the fire brigade, and the stories that he comes back with it's really shocking.
It's
the
awful
state of it. And I feel like we need to talk about it more, but we also need to understand how to have a conversation with somebody that's struggling.
Yes.
It's not just, you know, there's the really extreme kind of side of mental health which is obviously what you encountered, where someone is feeling it must be such a sad place to be, where you genuinely don't feel like you want to be part of this world anymore. And that's one extreme. But then there's the other side of it, where yeah, you do just feel a bit sad sometimes, or you know, you're exhausted, or and you're definitely not to the point where you want to end everything, but you could still do with support.
Yeah.
And I think it's learning how to address that with, or how to speak to somebody who is going through that. So when you had your breakdown, what did you want? What could you have done with people what did you really want someone to say to you or to help you with?
My first thing is, I'm not asking you to fix it. I just want you to listen. And I think sometimes, no matter how big or small your problem is, we're not always looking for an answer. Like, you can go to some people and they're like, right, we'll do this, this, and this, and this to fix it. But sometimes you don't want it to be fixed. You just want to get it off your chest. And that could be, as I say, something completely trivial to something much deeper than that. And everybody thinks that they're a great listener, and that they do. And everybody goes, oh, you know, what are your top 10 attributes? Oh, I'm a great listener. But when it comes to it, like, how well do you listen? Really, like, how well do you listen? And that was, for me, that was what I wanted, was just somebody to say, I'm not going to try and fix it, but I am going to listen to you. And then we can perhaps think about where we move forward.
Yeah, I think that's such a big one, is just learning to listen for the sake of listening, rather than listening in order to reply with a, you know, how to fix the situation. Mm-hmm. Because I think that's in our nature, isn't it? Just wanting to, what we want to fix people. Certainly equestrians, because I feel like we want to fix horses all the time. So why can we not fix people too? And I've got a couple of clients actually that continually have horses that they feel like they need to fix. Like that's the type of horse that they end up with. And I'm a big believer in what you put out is what you attract back.
Mm-hmm.
And the, for whatever reason, these few clients, I think I can think of four who who put out this thing like, I love fixing things. I like to. Yeah. And they always have horses that always have problems. And that's absolutely fine. If that's what you want, and I'm not blaming them in the slightest, but they will have, they'll take on the case that always naps going out of the start box, or the one that the ex-race horse that really was useless over fences, over hurdles, whatever, you know, didn't really run very well on the flat, has terrible feet, has kissing spine. Oh, but I'll have it.
I'll fix it.
Yes, exactly. They are those ones. And I feel like they're like that with people as well, actually.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because if I went to them with a problem then that I needed fixing, they would be the people to go to. 100% they would go and fix that problem. But like you say, sometimes you need somebody to listen rather than try and fix. You might not need fixing necessarily immediately. Sometimes you just got to be and understand. And it takes time to understand when you're going through something like that as well, doesn't it? Because quite often you don't know. Were you aware of what was happening to you?
No. So my other half, Danny, he was the one who noticed it first, I think. I was drinking a lot more wine, enough to keep Blossom Hill in in production for a while. And at the time, I just thought, I'll just have a glass of wine. I'll just have a glass of wine. And then, you know, a glass of wine will chill me out. And then before I knew it, a glass of wine became a bottle of wine. And then he would, because they've got a 3-hour time difference. For me, it would be like, I don't know, it would be late. So for me, it would be 8:00. He'd just finish his duty. 3 hours later, it would be like 10:30. And I would be more than merry. And it was really frustrating for him because he was that far away and he could see me unraveling. And that's the only way I can put it. And I used can't think of the word. I used an expression the other day. It felt like somebody had come into my house and switched the cooker on, and it was like I was just waiting, and they'd gone out and left it, and I was just waiting for the bang. That's the only way I can describe it, is I felt like somebody had left the gas on and it was just waiting to go boom. And as I say, for me, I didn't realize. I just thought that I was going about life normally, and it wasn't until afterwards. And now I look back and think, Jesus Christ, like, how did you function? Well, I didn't. That's the bottom line. I didn't function, not adequately. And it took probably a good 12 months to try and get my life back under control. And there are still days when I sort of feel like, oh, I haven't got any control, and I really struggle with that. But then the other thing that I had to learn is you can't control everything, and you just have to move with what's happening around you. And I think as horse people, we are control freaks in a way, because we like to try and control everything to stop the horses hurting themselves, stop them colicking, stop this. We have to control how much exercise they have, how much exercise we have, what they're eating, what we're eating. Well, most of the time what they're eating, not what we're eating. We just eat this on the go. And yeah, at the time, I thought I was coping. That's the irony of all of it, is I was like, yeah, I've got this. It's fine. I did not have it, let me tell you. I was not okay.
Yeah, I think that's a really common thing, is that other people close to you can see that something's slightly wrong. And actually the person concerned is totally in denial about the fact that there's something wrong. So how did your other half broach that subject? Did he do it well? Did you push back? What happened?
So I know it's quite common for a lot of people to, like, when somebody says to you, you're being an arse for one reason or another, people take it like, oh, I'm not. As much as I say I didn't know, I think subconsciously there was something somewhere, and he actually came home from his deployment early to help me with. Yeah, he came back 4 weeks early because he knew something, and he said to me, he said, you are not the person that I left in July. I'm gonna cry.
Oh, bless you. I don't want to make you cry.
No, I'm happy, because I'm so grateful to have had him. I mean, being on a ship with lots of men, he has to learn how to communicate with people. And at the time, I couldn't even communicate with myself, never mind anyone else. And for him to say to me, he just said to me, as I said, you are not who I left. And not for the better. And obviously people change and people grow. And he's not saying, I want you to be exactly as you were when I left. But there was such a drastic change. And it was hard. It was hard to hear, especially from someone you love, for them to turn around and say that. It hurts. It does hurt. And then suddenly, as I say, I think it kind of goes one of two ways, as you said. You either push back or you stand back and you look at the bigger picture. And it's almost like somebody slaps you in the face and you kind of go, oh, shit. Like, how have I ended up here from where I was?
And acceptance of what's happening is a big thing. And owning it, learning to own it is so difficult. Certainly in terms of, I've been through various things, but actually learning to own what you're going through is a massive step forward. So when was it quite soon after that you kind of owned what you were going through?
No, I don't think so. I think it took, so I had to have treatment at the hospital after my abnormal smear. And I had to have follow-up appointments and stuff. And that happened, that was probably in the March. So he came back in the December. I got this job where I'm working now. And it wasn't until, I would probably say, the June, probably about 6 months later, I just wasn't ready. I wasn't ready to say, do you know what? I had an issue. I was almost too proud and pig-headed, because you just don't hear people say, like, do you know what? I feel like that, or I felt like that, or I've been in that situation. And I didn't want to be the one letting the side down, going, well, I feel like that. And I just wasn't ready for it. I didn't want to be weak. And yeah. It's not weak. And I think almost not saying it is the weakest thing you can do, because it's like I said earlier, nobody will thank you for being the strong one. People will thank you for being honest about how you're feeling. And then they can help you if you want it, or listen if you want it. And then you can give your best back to them. Because that's what people want from you. And it's what you want to give people. You don't want to give people half measures. You don't want like the half of what's left in the glass, do you? You want the full measure of it. So,
yeah, you definitely want to be able to present the best side of yourself, not from a vanity point of view or an egotistical point of view. Mm. Just for your family, even for your horse and your dog and things.
For yourself as well.
Yeah, exactly. You do, because you don't feel good about yourself if you know that you've been a bit narky with someone because you're exhausted. And the only way to make sure that you don't get to that stage is just by looking after yourself a bit better.
Yeah.
So what do you do now to look after yourself better?
I talk to anyone who'll listen. I am very open, and I am your classic oversharer. And I am that person, like if you go to a party and I'm trying to like tone it down, I'll tell you my life story. It's not the best. But I do like, to Danny, I will share everything with him. And funny what you said at the beginning is I try to prioritize things that need to be done. And if they're not life ending and world ending and life threatening, then they can just wait, because it's just not worth it. And I think that's for me, the bottom line is nothing is worth making you feel like that, no matter how high value it is. If you are struggling because you're doing too much or whatever the case might be, 9 times out of 10, it's not worth it. If you look back at what you're worrying about in a year time, will it still be relevant? Probably not.
No, exactly. Or even in 2 weeks time. Or
exactly. And yeah, so for me, just enjoying being able to communicate with people is, because I just didn't know how. I didn't know how, which is ironic because I talk for England. So if it was a sport, I'd get a gold.
Oh, bless you. Oh, well, thank you so much for sharing all of that. That's amazing that you just so openly talked about it, because not very many people do. And I think the more people do talk like you just have, the better, because it is something that we do all go through, whether we admit it or not. No one, unless you're a robot, nobody doesn't have the ups and downs. And I think it's just learning how to cope with them, because you can cope with them. And so I know some people are more resilient than others, and some people's thresholds are higher than others and everything, but people go through ups and downs. That is life. And the more we talk about the downs, the better, I think, because life is not all full of the shiny stuff that you see on social media. I'm sorry, I don't care how many people want to ignore the fact that, there's two sides to every story. Because on social media, you only see the good bits, generally speaking. And actually, that I do follow Vicky Patterson on Instagram, and she does show each side. And I think that's a really good thing. But also, the thing that interests me about her is that she shows photographs of her years ago looking, she's all dolled up and she, lots of fake tan on, and she's very thin and dressed up to the nines, and she actually says that was my least happy time.
Yeah.
And from the outside, obviously you would never think that, because she looks amazing for she wants to have lots of fake tan on, marvelous. But she does, she's adhering to all the kind of stereotypical things that we have in our head about what success looks like, isn't it? And
yeah,
and those photos, and she's going, actually, I was so unhappy there, and now I've put on a bit more weight, and I've, you know, I'm in a happy relationship and all this kind of stuff, and I'm prioritizing different things in my life, I'm so much happier. But I think that's partially what I want kind of these podcasts and blogs and things to be about, is that actually we can't just focus on the shiny bits of life. Yeah. And I think a lot of the time social media does that. And I particularly liked your social media because it's literally like all encompassing. It's the good bits and the bad bits and everything in between. And I loved that. I absolutely love that about your social media.
Thank you.
So what, just remind us, everyone, what your social media handles are.
So I am at the Cobby Chronicles, COBBY, on Instagram and on TikTok, because all the cool kids are on TikTok. And I actually also have a Facebook page, which is Tony Clark Comedy, Tony with an I, Clark without an E. Can you tell I've said that more than once in my life? that I'm just trying to dabbling I'm trying to do something a little bit different. So yeah, the only three places really that I am.
Oh, fabulous. Well, thank you so much, Tony. That was just, I loved listening. I could listen to you all day, and I could chat to you all day, but that was absolutely brilliant. So thank you so much. And thank you for being so open. And I'm sure loads and loads of people will get so much from listening to this.
Thank you.
So yeah, massive, massive thank you.
Thank you. Oh, my hands and the backs of my legs are sweating now because I'm nervous.
You don't need to be nervous. Well done.
No, it's just horrible thing to do and to have to expose. Who do I think I am? Expose, like, to talk about. And I just think, I don't want to say like make it normal, because it sounds horrible. Like, it just say like, let's make being sad normal. That's not what I think it's about, but I do think having that healthy balance of good, bad and ugly is what could be made normal.
And destigmatizing.
Yeah.
Just talking about it and acknowledging that it happens in life.
And I also think as well, like, when, like, speaking about the stigmatizing of it, I just think if somebody doesn't agree with it, other people's opinion of you are none of your business. And if they don't want to, if they don't like what you're saying, or they're not happy with it for whatever reason, get rid of the follower, remove them, mute them. That's what it's there for.
Yeah. Oh, well done. Well said. Brilliant. Thank you, Tony.
You're very welcome. Thank you very much for having me.
My pleasure.